you don't like what we tell you to believe in, we'll kill you.
Oh, you don't like interruptions? Well, this is a different kind of an interruption. This is a pre-recorded interruption to remind you that you wouldn't be hearing this interruption if you would actually pony up, support our work here at TRS, and buy a subscription to the show. It's only $10 a month, unless you're using, like, e-checks. Then there's some extra fees, because the e-checks fucking suck. Don't use those. The point is, we need your support. You can't use credit cards anymore. It's kind of a pain in the balls, but we still need you to help us out. And if you're enjoying the content, these silly commercials will go away. We won't bother you anymore if you just do. So go to therightstuff.biz/paywall, make an order. You can use Z-checks. You can mail in a money order. You can use a bunch of different cryptocurrencies, all which suck and are annoying, but we'll get it figured out. Or you can go to my Odyssey channel, Uncle Sven's Other Tone Stream, and you can give me a donation there and send me a screenshot of the transaction. We'll get you figured out. So, yeah. I guess any second now we'll go back to the show. I don't know when, because I don't want these to be quick and predictable so that you can't just skip through them to make them go away. So this one's going to be a little extra long. But yeah, you need a subscription. You need a subscription.
This is Tedious on therightstuff.biz.
Sorry, my mouse pointer disappeared. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the TDS episode number joke I forgot to do. The other day was 1043.
I forgot to do.
Welcome to TDS 104.3, nothing but rock. And I can't do that because now we're on 1044.
This is the good stuff, the right stuff.
Men of our race are still being born with the right stuff.
See, we don't put on airs here. When we make errors, we wear them on our sleeves, like bright red armbands with fancy symbols on them.
Well, you really messed up by not doing an announcement like that on episode 1027.
What was 1027?
1027?
That wasn't like easy listening jazz or something? What was...
1027 was any... the WNEW, the fucking... It was original Opie and Anthony.
Oh, was that a rock station? I thought that was just a news station.
No, it was like the... NEW is... What was it... What was that?
I don't remember.
Yeah, it was 102.
I remember WXRK was where there they was 92.3, and there was 104.3, and there was another rock station. There was another radio station in Middletown that we used to have. Oh, then there was PDH 101.5. I don't know. No one cares. Anyway, we're here.
Yeah, WNEW FM. Right now, it says they play the best pop music live from New York live now, but it is actually. Back in the day, in the 90s, it was classic rock.
I thought it was a talk station. Anyway.
Ah, it was classic rock.
Classic, total
That's
classic.
When they started.
So, this is basically the actual Cockrell debate, this show. Like, this is what I think this is what you do. Man. You just talk about the Holocaust, you make fun of him and his schwitzing, and then the debate just goes on, because it's not going to happen. I'm just warning everybody. The debate is not going to happen.
I think it'll. I mean, I don't know.
He's going to pull out of it. He is his last ditch effort.
Fine. I don't have any intention of not doing it, though.
No, he's not going to. That's what I'm trying to say. He's going to not do it. He's going to pretend that you didn't do it, but he's not going to do it. The latest thing is he was proposing a ridiculous debate format. Again, because you won't email him back and talk to him every day because he needs a friend more than anything.
Well,
he just says,
I don't think that's what's going on. I'll tell you what I think is going on. And I think it's been going on since.
Why does this keep happening?
What's that?
What?
We have people that decide that they want to be our friends and they want to be like in some sort of really weird.
No, that's not what's happening. He wants to debate Mike and own him. He realizes how likable and smarter than him that Mike is, and he can't get over the fact that they disagree on the Holocaust, so they can't be friends. And he's like, it's just like Michael Edison Hayden. It's this psychological.
I think you're I think you're...
Yeah, that's who I was thinking about.
You're such a fag. Just let me talk shit. Why do you poo-poo when I talk shit on these people? Okay. Just let it happen. He's a fag. He wants to fuck you. He wants you. He wants to be with you. He wants you to like him. That's what all of this is rooted in. Same with Michael Esday. I don't know. Yeah, like, he has a real... He has an intellectual fucking rigorous, like, interest in debate with you over the subject that everyone knows is not true. That's what's really
happening.
Oh, no,
that's not true at all. No, but here's what I think is... Cockrell had, I mean, look, if we're going to be doing psychologizing, basically
we're not, we're trolling.
He wants internet clout and he thinks it's a way to get it. And he actually has, I didn't know this, but I was told this, that he's in some little clique of people that are like constantly fanning each other's balls and slapping each other's asses on Twitter. And he does have, he actually does have some Jewish accounts and some, but it's all like low tier stuff. It's all like clown world stuff. You know, he's interacting with Spencer and Kaufness and like Chuck Johnson and basically Chuck like Johnson. Very low tier, absurdist clown internet people. And he has a hard time because he's never really had attention before in his life, understanding that the attention he's getting is it's like Babby's first internet clout. You know, and so he's like, he doesn't understand that it's all from like clowns, or maybe he does. It's all from like clowns and bad actors. And his theory of wanting to debate me, or at least why he might actually like want to debate the topic. I don't know. I don't think so. But the theory behind this.
He wants to debate the topic insofar as he thinks that he can trip you up and make you look silly, which is generally the idea that he should be led to spring something on you that perhaps you haven't heard before or researched before, something that would take 15 minutes of research to rebut. This is generally how it goes. If somebody tells you something about the Holocaust you've never heard before, it will probably take you 15 minutes to go find the issue with it that disproves
it.
But the problem is, when you're having a debate on a live stream, you can't really just take 15 minutes to do research while everyone's bored. That's considered an L, and that's the format he wants to have. And that's not going
to
work.
And that's what he wants to do. That's what all debaters want to do. Debates on the internet are usually about like humiliating the other person. And this one is no exception. And that was the whole destiny theory behind why he would go and debate alt-right figures or like, you know, racist figures or whatever, is he never tried to debate his object. And this was, I'll give him, this was intelligent on his part. His object was simply to make the other person look bad and like lose clout. And this is operating on the theory that if you do that, then this person will lose subscriber and lose fans and lose influence. And there won't be able to be influencing people to be racist or anti-Semitic anymore or whatever. And this is why Cockrell has attracted the attention of certain figures that would like to see me, you know, taken down a peg in this format. That's the whole idea. And this is why from the very beginning, he has tried to do various tricks to give himself some kind of structural or technical advantage. Mm-hmm. And I've basically tried to weed out any ability to do that. My position is if you want to sit down and talk about the Holocaust, we can do it. But I have this trickery, this weird shit you're doing, this tactical, and he interprets everything I do as he tries to spin it as some kind of trick, but all I'm doing is fending off what he's doing.
No, he's like the whole not, he's not
I mean, in, the ultimate proof he's of not this interpreting, is the refusing.
He's not interpreting what you do as bad faith. He's trying to spin what you're doing as because he's doing it.
That's what I'm saying. Interpreting.
He knows what he's doing.
He might not believe it, but like that's how he's interpreting, spinning, whatever. But it started with the refusal to translate the documents from the German language on the premise like, ha ha ha, you can't do the research. So that's self-admittedly a trick to get around the rule that I set that I don't want you to spring documents. He literally tried to set it up so he could still spring a document on me. That's shows that he's been dishonest from the beginning. Additionally, the first moderator was a Jewish anarchist. This guy, ask yourself, he's a Jewish anarchist. He was openly colluding with Cockrell and Avi Bitterman, probably on ways to trip up Stryker and I and trick us and things like that. So we said, no, we're not going to walk into this where you're going to be moderate. Your friend the debate platform that you exist on, that Dr. Abby existed on, that's where he was always doing debating with the whatever the fan base for that channel is, that you exist on, you're familiar with, and you're friends with this moderator. I'm not doing that. Like, I'm not walking into it where you are like that. Like, that would be like you moderating the debate. Right, that'd be like me asking. We'll have Jesse moderate.
Essentially,
like that, it's exactly
essentially,
the same, right?
But essentially, I should moderate the debate. All the slanderous, like personal insult and clown shit that he's done in his writing about you warrants an unfair. It's like he doesn't. Basically, it just shouldn't happen. He should just cut the crap. Just say that you think Mike Enoch is a bad person. You think Mike Panovich is a bad person because he doesn't believe in the Holocaust, and just leave it at that. There's no debate to be had. You're just an internet clown. There's nothing like beating him in the debate. It's not going to win anything. Like, we win the Holocaust debate every time we do a show on it because we just show the bullshit. He doesn't have anything better. He doesn't. The fact that, like, I'm going to show you documents that are in German. It's like, if these documents proved anything, they'd be in English and they'd be posted everywhere and they would be touted by the establishment. Every time the Holocaust comes up, the truth is you're just going to rely on you don't know what. Because. Remember, this is the guy that posted at me a screenshot of Miklas Naizli's report when I asked him, has anybody ever, before the Leuchter report, testified to washing down the walls in the gas chambers? Right. And he said, yo, you're so stupid, of course they have. And he posted Naizli talking about washing his bomb.
This is pretty annoying, huh? All this can go away. You bought a paywall at rightstuff.biz/paywall. You can use crypto. E-checks, mail in a money order, or even use your credit card on Sven's Odyssey channel. The link will be below in the show notes. That's therightstuff.biz/paywall.
Bodies, like no washing of the... This is what... And if, imagine if that was in German and I couldn't... Naizli is Greek, I think. Imagine if that book, if he posted that like in the original Greek or something. I think he was Greek.
He's Hungarian.
Is he Hungarian?
But yeah.
Who was Greek?
He was Hungarian.
Somebody was Greek in these things. I can't remember. But I mean,
Dario Gabay was Greek.
Okay, yeah, that was what I'm thinking of. But if he posted that in Hungarian, like, I wouldn't be able to read it. And I would, and if he just says, like, this says that, blah, and like.
However, the name Mikos does sound Greek, so I can understand why you might think that.
But,
Mikos sounds like a Greek name.
But the guy just lies. There's nothing. When he shows you data, it's so easy. And then this is also the guy who was trying to, like, pretend that the chemistry of Auschwitz was inaccurate, and he tried to pretend that his credential in understanding chemistry better than you is that he dropped out of the chemistry program at his school. That was a credential.
I didn't actually read that thread, but yeah, people were telling me about
that. That was a credential. That was he literally said
his credentialism.
His credentialism was I dropped out of the chemistry program at my school before I took history.
Well, by that metric, I'm also an expert in history.
I'm an expert in everything because I dropped out of every college program
except audio.
My
major was history, and I dropped out of college.
Maybe I'd be better at audio if I dropped out of it.
Well,
maybe that's my problem.
That entirely possible.
I did learn more about audio at Guitar Center
than
in college.
Like,
that's true.
You know, doing credentialism.
But when your credentialism is, I tried this and it wasn't for me. Therefore, I know more than you do about chemistry. It's like, oh my God, dude.
But it's just like,
that's not. Look,
again, the point I'm trying to make here is that there is a theory that's out there about how to discredit personalities, right? How to, like, and this is the Jews are working with this theory. And so the reason he's getting his shoulders rubbed right now by Jews is because he is probably, I will bet you this, he's overselling himself to them. And after this happens, they're going to cut him off because it's going to be a disaster.
No, after this happens, they'll pretend they won.
They'll pretend they won, but like, it won't be true.
Right.
But like, nobody will think it's
the Holocaust.
True.
No one thinks the Holocaust
and
is
inevitably,
true.
inevitably, the video of it will get removed from his channel. If he doesn't remove it himself, he might remove it himself and say it was removed by YouTube. But it will exist on our channel forever. And it will be free. We'll put it on Odyssey and people
absolutely.
Can watch it for free if they want to. But the point is that he's operating on this theory, this idea. And it's probably true to some extent. There's probably some research going into this. I mean, this was Destiny did an interview before he went and became like a cozy streamer. unless he's still doing that. I think he's off of there now.
I think that was one of the, I have no idea. One of the A-Log blowups last week was he left again.
All right. Well,
it's actually kind of funny.
Give a shit.
But go ahead.
But the point is, he did an interview with, I think, some magazine, or was it Rolling Stone or something like that. I think they did an article on him, actually. And they were like, the guy who's destroying the alt-right. And he articulated this idea that, like, if you can get one of these guys into a debate, then you can kind of tear them down in front of their own audience, make them look stupid. And that's why Destiny's debate with me also failed, because
he didn't accomplish that with me. He pretended.
Right? And again, the reason was because I knew what he was going to do, and I set the rules ahead of time that he couldn't do that. And to his credit, Ralph enforced them on Destiny, but he did it because he thought it was funny. He did it because he thought it was funny to see Destiny like not be able to just engage in a lot of personal.
Ralph's a good guy. I like Ralph.
Was that the debate when Destiny pretended to agree with you on a bunch of stuff and that people should just go outside and that was the whole problem?
Well, it became a thing where he, in order to not avoid me making a lot of points on topics, he would just agree.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then it would just kill. And I was left a bit flummoxed by that because I was like, so what are we debating here?
Right.
Right. Like, so, yeah.
Just,
so
in the end, it was just bad. It was just bad content in the end.
Yeah. In the end, it was just boring.
Yeah.
And a lot of people said so. But yeah. But I didn't let him do the insulting me and tearing me down. That never happened. And so the point is, that's what Cockrell wants to do.
Right.
That's what, frankly, a lot of the people on Roto that were fanning his balls back in the day wanted to do. They want to get me on screen, and they want to attack me personally. That's what Halsey English did back
in the
day.
I remember that very well.
So, and I was taken aback by that. And I was actually prepared to debate the Jewish question. He just started personally attacking me. It wasn't a good look. But, like, the point being that that's what they want to do. And ever since that Halsey debate, I'm on, like, hair trigger with this. I sense when people are doing it. I can tell when they're doing it. And the very fact that from the beginning he tries to set a moderator that is somebody that he has been colluding with, he tries to eschew the rules that I set up about not springing things on people in the middle of the debate, and now he once again has proposed Richard Spencer, again, knowing that this is a person that bears a personal grudge against me, and has actually even gone so far as to like leak private emails to the SPLC. That I exchanged with him back in the day when I thought I was friends with him. So, and by the way, don't email with that guy. If you do, eventually Jews are just going to be looking at all of it. Like, he's turning it. He doesn't have very much, thankfully, but, you know, he basically informs on people to Jewish organizations.
Didn't Cockrell post, like, screenshots of an email from you? Wasn't that part of the Substack post where he was schwitzing about?
Probably. Well, he posted the screenshot where I said, we'll just go through the stuff you sent me.
Well, did he have your permission to post a screenshot of your email?
No. But I don't.
I know you don't care, but it's like, what are we doing here? Like,
I've never posted an email of his with me. I've talked about what he said, but I've never posted the email.
That's a line that shows what a scumbag you are if you do a thing like that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like a constant. Yeah, it's all very bad faith. And so eventually, if he will agree to the good faith discussion, which I have proposed, which is, look, you can do your opening statement. I know you think it's an incredibly boring thing. It probably will be. I'll do one, and then we'll get into it, right? We'll go back and forth. We'll go through your materials.
I swear to God, if this involves 25 minutes of Gish Gallop opening statement for me, it's just like, oh my God.
Well, that's another thing.
That's one of the strategies with that is like what the guy was taught. Was it Radicalized Normie? I don't remember who wrote the post on Bang. It was like, that's where you get into the tactical complexity. If you can just throw all the things that are all lies and only make sense together as like a pretzel, then you have to now you've got 25 minutes worth of material to unravel, and it's like impossible to do. That's why I think you should just go one thing at a time.
Well, I'm not. See, the thing is, that's, I think that's ultimately going to work against them because of the premise I'm going to put forward. I have a whole thing I'm going to do. And it's okay. Basically that tactic, which could possibly seem convincing to somebody by taking a lot of little snippets of information out of, I'm not even going to say out of context, just like a bunch of little snippets of information, like like that thing from Mikos Niezli here, something from Goebbels here,
right,
something from Adolf Eichmann here, this, and just like stringing these things together with the weight of the inertia of the narrative that you learned when you were a kid,
mm-hmm,
and the entire establishment behind it is typically what they do. But that's not actually good historical practice. And historians themselves will tell you this. They will say this method of stringing together anecdotal tidbits to form a narrative, which is what they call convergence of evidence,
mm-hmm,
is frowned upon and even criticized in all other realms of history.
Right.
Like all other historians, if you do this, they will criticize it and they'll say, well, that's extremely shady, questionable stuff. Like, that doesn't work. And in my research, I actually found some examples of this. So I could go into this. It's kind, mm-hmm, of interesting. And it shows the stark contrast. So
right,
this guy, Robert Conquest, who's a conservative historian, staunch anti-communist for ideological reasons mainly, he came out with a book in 1968 called The Great Purge. And in it, he put out like really high numbers for the supposed killings in the Stalinist Great Purge.
Okay.
He then in 1990, after the Soviet archives had been opened. Now, it wasn't just the fall of the wall that led the Soviet archives to be opened. They had actually been gradually being opened throughout the 80s, and there had been some scholarly exchanges between us.
If you're hearing my voice right now, something has gone terribly, terribly wrong. Unless this is just how you want to live, who am I to tell people to stop listening to free content that's constantly interrupted, that has to deal with my voice and whatever audio quality this is going to come out in? Who am I to tell people that they should be getting behind the paywall at therightstuff.biz/paywall? Especially if they're not white, which I assume that's what you probably are if you're hearing my voice right now. That's just my assumption. It could be wrong, but I mean, if you're not white, legally you do have to tell me that you're not white. I told Sven that I'd record some commercials for him, and at first I thought I was going to put some effort into it, but then I realized, why don't I just ramble in the dumbest way possible and force you to listen to it? Because that's what you're doing right now. You are listening to this. Mike was probably saying something very interesting, something very insightful, and now you're listening to me. Is this really what you want? Is this how you want to live? Do you want to be non-white? Because again, I just assume that's what you are. You could always fix that. You could rectify this problem by going to therightstuff.biz/paywall and getting yourself a subscription. And then you'll never have to hear me again, you know, unless I'm filling it or something.
Soviet scholars and American Western scholars on these exact things. The Soviet Union in the 80s wasn't trying to hide that Stalin was like a brutal mass killer.
Okay.
And the thing is, but Conquest numbers were ridiculous.
Okay.
And they were ridiculous to the point where they were impossible. Again, based on the figures of the actual people that were in and out of the gulags, based on actual Soviet records, which, yes, they did keep them. And they kept them because, from their perspective, these were jails, and the people in the jail were in there for a legitimate reason. One of the problems with this type of scholarship is, particularly when you come into it with an ideological bias, is you're looking at a regime, a historical regime. You're looking at the Nazis or you're looking at the Soviets from a perspective of extreme anti-Nazism or anti-Soviet ideology, and you're assuming that they think they're bad people too, and that they wouldn't just keep records. So no, yes. And so if you're surprised, like, oh my God, the Soviets actually kept records. It's like, well, yeah, of course they did. They're like, we've got this many prisoners.
They were honey posting.
This many of them are political traitors to the state.
Yeah.
You know, like, and so, yeah, of course, because they think it's right, the right thing to do. So you can't, the idea that they would, that they're like hiding records. Why? Like, why? It would be like, you know, does America do that? Like, you know, I mean, maybe it does, but it does. It's not going to hide records of like numbers of people going in and out of prisons in America. Like, I think those are accurate, generally speaking, unless there's error. But what would be the inaccuracies would be from error, not from like deliberate sabotage of the data because they wanted to hide the evil things they were doing. Right. So going into it with the presumption that you're looking at the Soviet Union or Nazi Germany and you're looking at it like they're hiding things. There's something in these documents that's minimizing or lying about the things that are being purported in them. No, why? Because you're not – because the first people preparing these don't think that way.
Right.
So this is one of the criticisms of Conquest and these ridiculously inflated numbers. But he didn't even have any documentation in his 1968 book. And he himself said rumor and anecdote is a great source of history as long as the rumors and anecdotes match up. This is the same argument as convergence of evidence in the Holocaust. We'll take these absurd stories from these survivors, and as long as there's something similar in them, well, then that's true.
You know what?
And as one of these historians I was looking into, a guy by the name of Eric Hobsbawm, who, of course, people will accuse him of being a Red. I think he probably fucking was a Red. He probably was a fucking tanky. But he made the point, well, that's only valid if rumors don't spread and if memoirists don't read each other's memoirs.
Okay.
So it's like it's basically saying like, yeah, you can't – a rumor by its nature spreads and many, many people hear it. And we all know how they get exaggerated in telephone game and how that all works, right? That's been – people have studied that, right? So – a rumor as a source of a historical fact is an absurd premise. What's funny is this guy named Stephen Wheatcroft, who's actually an Australian, British probably by nature.
P.D. Wheatcroft.
Very British name, Wheatcroft. He is a historian at the University of Melbourne. He wrote an attack on Robert Conquest.
Think
he
died?
A number of them. He kind of had a debate going with Robert Conquest for a while on this. And he took the same position. Like, Conquest, you don't take – Your numbers are way overblown. You should focus on the documentary record, what you can prove, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, he didn't deny that the Stalinists killed people. One of the remarkable things is in 1937, Stalinist government carried out 700,000 executions, and nobody denies that. Now, I don't know if they were all political, but that's a hell of a lot.
That's a lot of executions.
It's a lot of executions in 1 year. Unless I'm getting that wrong, if I am, fact check me, but that's what I believe I read from reading some of these papers. What's funny is Wheatcroft actually senses, though, that he's in dicey territory when criticizing Conquest because he inbefores it in one of his papers. He says,
Hickory dickory dock.
But this doesn't apply to the Holocaust. He's like, my criticism of using anecdotal, rumor-based, and literary sources and you could call some of these Holocaust sources literary, right? Because these people wrote books and they're telling stories. So he's like, but that doesn't apply to the Holocaust because it was investigated much earlier. It was investigated right away by a military authority. Of course, he doesn't tell you that military authority was the Psychological Warfare Division of the U.S. Army run by a Jew, Alfred Rosenberg. I think that was his name. His name was Rosenberg. Anyway, which is not the Nazi Rosenberg, a different Rosenberg. That guy wasn't Jewish. But and I've got a whole book. I got that book, Psych War, that Dean Ierbud talks about in his video. So the funny thing is, so Wheatcroft does this like rigorous takedown of Conquest numbers, and he's going through this and that. The funniest thing is, he says in his paper, he has a paper on German and Soviet mass killings. And he actually says that there's a theory that has developed, and it's actually very popular with conservatives. Now, this paper is from 1995 where he talks about this. This theory is developed amongst conservatives, very popular with conservative scholars, and it kind of overlaps with intentional versus functional ideas, right? Intentional meaning idea that the Holocaust was planned from the beginning, it was ordered, and it was a directive from the top, and versus functional, who say, like, well, it kind of just evolved by means of some kind of like mental telepathy or something like that. But there's this theory that's called like totalitarian theory. And it's really popular with conservatives, where their idea is totalitarian governments inherently lead to genocide and mass killings. And he, in order to challenge this, Wheatcroft does his paper on German and Soviet atrocities. How do we explain them? But he says at the beginning, this is 90% about the Soviets, because that's my field of study. That's what I'm an expert in.
Yeah.
So for the Germans, he defaults to the narrative. And he says, the, you know, it's different. They were well documented right from the beginning. A military intelligence division studied this. And then he references this guy, Eugen Kogan, who wrote this book, Theory and Practice of Hell, which was originally published in German, called like the, it's called Der SS-Staat, like the SS state. Eugen Kogan, it was a Jew, but he converted to Christianity, and he was same. He claims to have been an inmate at Buchenwald. There's lots of reasons to think that he was, but he probably wasn't at the end of the war, because he had some in the book, he had concocted some fantastical escape story whereby he made friends with Dr. Ding Schuler, who was the Nazi doctor at the camp, who basically evacuated him from the camp at the last minute and sent him back to Ding Schuler's own house. He sent him to his own house to hide out. And that's where he was when he started, made contact with the Army Psychological War Division. And then he wrote this book. But in this book, what's funny is Wheatcroft says in his 1995 paper, despite some inaccuracies, this book is really good. It's a great representation of the facts. Problem is, the book says 4.5 million Jews were gassed at Auschwitz. Okay, that's number one. And Wheatcroft even says, now this is 1995, he says, of course, that number is now disputed, and the number going around now is 1.5 million. But then he says in a footnote in the same paper, he says, but by no means should this change the entire number. So here's a guy who's made a career of disputing the numbers. He does like a rigorous intellectual job of disputing conquest numbers. But when it comes to the Holocaust, he considers this discrepancy of 3 million a minor inaccuracy, and then says that it doesn't change the overall total number of victims, which is exactly the kind of bullshit he would attack in any other context.
Okay.
So my point is that this is how historians deal with this topic. Not to mention the book the Kogan book has the lampshade, the shrunken heads.
Yeah.
I was pulling like insane stories out of it. It's going to be a source for a lot of stuff for this Halloween special, so much so I don't even want to ruin it.
Yeah.
Because there's so much good stuff in there. There's like really choice, spicy tales. But just think about it. But for those of you that have tuned into our last several years of Holocaust specials, I've got a motherload from this one book. And the only reason I looked into it is because it was referenced in this paper I was reading the other day. So it's really funny that this historians literally, as Dean Ayrbut says, they just take their thinking caps off when it comes to this. But I don't think they take their thinking caps off.
No.
I think they keep...
Oh, hey, guy. Herschel here. Are you listening to a free fag episode of The Daily Shower? Do you need a small personal loan so you can afford a paywall subscription? I may be able to help you out. For the very low price of just $10 a month, you can listen to Mike finish his talking points without annoying promotional bits like this one. Log on to therightstuff.biz/paywall and pick the payment option that best suits your white man's agency level. E-checks, money order by mail, or cryptocurrency. Support TRS's efforts in shutting down yids like me.
There, I like having a career cap on. Right, like that's what it is. Like that's what Wheatcroft is doing. Right, Wheatcroft is like, I'm a prestigious professor at Melbourne, the top Soviet historian, famous, you know, like in the historical community, he's a well known, very respected, prestigious guy. He wears suits. He's got a office with like, you know, wainscoting and like books all lined behind him, and he's got that whole Oxford.
All I have is vinyl flooring. I don't have any wainscoting. Fuck.
You know what I'm saying, though? But he's that type of guy, right? Like, that's what he's like. I am the premier Sovietologist at the University of Melbourne, internationally respected. So, of course, he can't say, yeah, actually, you know, everything I said about Robert Conquest's faulty analysis of the Soviet Union, it kind of also applies to the Holocaust. But let's just
step over that.
What if I installed like a chair rail around the edge where the fake wood flooring on the wall ends? Would it be more like scholarly of me if I like chair rail?
Maybe.
It might work. Chair rail, wainscoting. I don't know. Chair rail might work.
Michael was telling me he wants to come and redo my office with like wainscoting and a bookshelf behind me so that I look very prestigious on camera. I don't just have this brown wall behind me. Which looks kind of yellowish when light shines on it.
Mm. I came up with a Holocaust doc question the other day. Remember that one day we were talking about what cyanide asphyxiation does? This was a show several hundred shows ago, probably.
I think we've done that many times, yeah.
Well, yeah, so I just pulled up like the brief explainer here. How can you tell if someone died from cyanide? Bitter almond odor emanating from the victim in the presence of... In the presence of pink lividity during post-mortem examination, do they have any bodies that show that? Because I know a lot of the sauna commandos talk about purple faces. They talk about
body. Blue people. We've been over this, dude. We've been over this. It causes cherry red. It's like carbon
cherry red poison. But I said last week that, you know,
I'm going to asphyxiate myself with cyanide if I have this conversation again.
Well, no, I want to have a different conversation. I want to say, is there a body recovered in one of these camps that had that?
No.
I don't think so, though, because I sort of made kind of a mistake. I said they don't have a murder weapon. It's like, well, actually, they just don't have anybody that died of the alleged murder weapon to show
you. They
don't
have anything.
They have nothing with that. That's a big thing. Like, where is a single person who... You don't even have people who saw that. I don't remember cherry red, pink discoloration being mentioned. I mean, who knows? There might be one somewhere.
Witness
counts always say like blue or purple.
Blue, purple, the pooling, which basically is consistent with like this guy's been laying in a morgue for a while and his bodily fluids pooled in the back.
Lividity, but yeah. That would be like, hey, the body's been sitting here for like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And the reason they say it is because rumors spread and memoirists read each other's memoirs.
Right.
So like they're copying each other. Like someone else said blue bodies. So you say the bodies are blue.
I'm discoloring my body.
It's probably also like the whole idea of the cyanide itself is blue and it like stains you or something. Like, I got cyanide all over me. Cyclone! It's the color.
A green cloud emanating from their nostrils.
Don't forget Joseph Saccard talking about a green cloud.
That's what I just said. The green cloud. It's good.
Others said there's all kinds of stuff. There's some that say like the mouths would open up and gas would come out of the mouth. Right.
Yeah. When you have to dodge it. Oh my gosh.
Right. Yeah, so like it's
Warner Brothers cartoon.
It's like smoke. It's like Hollywood. It's very dumb.
It's like a cartoon show.
Ranbot was A-logging Cockrell last night, and I hadn't seen it, but he played the clip where he was on whatever that stream was, where he was saying like, "No, the Holocaust is not 6 million gassed Jews."
Right.
And I mean, I laughed so hard because. What was it? Wednesday? Not last night. The night before. Wednesday night, I was writing a Holocaust denialist parody song, and in order to mine for more, like more jokes and things to throw in there, I was on Jamie's website. I was on Holocaust.claims, and I was reading through her articles, which are very good. And in one of I can't find it now, but one of them she linked to an affirmation, you know, Holocaust article. That basically had exactly what I was talking about earlier this week or last week, that like it was an article that was claiming it was like 12 plus million people were killed so that they still had room to have 6 million gas. It's like, nigga, this is the claim. Like, you can't say that shit or talk about how come the claim has been limited down. How come it's come down from where it was, because the 6 million number had been alleged in the past many times by Jews. It's a magic. It's like whatever their numerology is. There has to be 6 million Jews burned in a burnt offering. And
I also think that part of that is there's a lot of people that talk about that. Now, one thing that's not in question is that the number would have been claimed many, many times prior to the Holocaust. There are people that speculate as some Jewish Kabbalistic reason why this is. I don't know about that stuff. I don't the esotericism. I mean, it's possible that might be the origin of the number. We do know the number appears many, many times. And there's actually a book that you can get about this. But the thing is, I think essentially they're also another factor there is they're trapped in their own narrative that they can't come down from the claim at all. And in fact, there was a documentary or so-called documentary, a film by an Israeli Jew who did a film a few years ago, very recently. I'd have to look up what it was called. I can't remember what it was called. I can't remember what his name was, about the number and how he went around and talked to experts and he was saying, oh yeah, a lot of people say that number is probably not right or it's probably not exactly that. But nonetheless, we have to, and the thesis of the film at the end, his conclusion is, we have to just keep it because it's now become a symbol of the Holocaust, a symbol of our suffering. And that suffering and that evil that was done to us doesn't change if that number isn't exact. So he gives like what would be to basically an irresponsible person a plausible way out of saying like, well, you know, the facts don't matter because what matters is our suffering, et cetera, all this shit. And actually, there was a funny part in Wheatcroft's essay. He talks about how some professors have ventured into the territory of saying, because he says sometimes you'll hear people say things like, well, Stalin ultimately killed more than Hitler. Doesn't that make him worse? And then he talks about a Jewish scholar who says no, because the German, first of all, it says like, oh, well, the Germans intentionally killed this many, whereas the Soviets killed this many. But then they killed them through neglect or dysfunction, not through like intentional murder, and then parsing out the moral differences there. And then he says, of course, this Jewish scholar says that because Jews were targeted, that makes the Holocaust more singular, is the word he's using. It's a more singular event because the Jews were targeted. But he's like, but I'm of the opinion that if you were to target 6 million people who were of a different ethnicity or of a mixed ethnicities, it would still be equally bad because this is just a horrendous number of people to kill. And any death is singular to the person killed and to their family and friends. And so this way of looking at it is if targeting, you know, he's like, I'm just not going to wade into that territory. It's sort of interesting, kind of interesting. He also said something else, which was kind of wrong thinking, which is that he was saying one thing we have is that while it's true, he says, while it's true, the Germans started behaving very badly upon their entry into Poland in 1941 or 1940. He's like, they actually, their numbers of atrocities didn't really start hitting high numbers until after Soviet atrocities in the same territory.
Interesting.
In other words, positing this is something that right wing like leaning or conservative leaning scholars sometimes have toyed around with but not really pushed too hard. And I've even seen not scholars but you know people like there's sci-fi Danish sci-fi author Poul Anderson had a story he wrote where he said something like this, like of course the people, because again it's not controversial with historians that the people in the territories occupied by the Nazis were sympathetic to the Nazis and anti-Soviet.
Hmm.
They were siding with Nazis.
Nobody liked them Soviets,
man.
They
were all doing pogroms.
The Soviets were a menace.
What's that?
I said the Soviets were a menace. Nobody liked them.
Right. Nobody wanted them.
Except
everybody preferred.
Except like Roosevelt and Churchill. They seemed to really like them for some reason.
Well, Jews wanted them. And so, yeah. So their buttgoys wanted them. But it's pretty interesting. But that's a funny thing. And he says like, yeah, in this year, Nazis really only killed like 9,000 people. And then it ballooned. It's like a balloon payment. And I'm like, could it be that it ballooned once like the propaganda apparatus got into full swing here? You know, is that a possibility here?
I don't know.
But yeah, so again, it's just it's very funny. And essentially my view is that claims of genocide are oftentimes, if not always, propagandistic. I mean, think about Serbia. So in 1999 and 98, when America was bombing Serbia, they said that they were genociding Albanians.
It was the right policy. We are very excited to see America.
Gunter is the only guy that says this anymore. if I would just the BBC the other day referencing this latest little flare up on the border of Kosovo and Serbia that happened and has been capturing headlines and stuff, because it's another sort of contact point of the West versus Russia struggle, right, where Serbia is clearly like allied with Russia, clearly leaning in Russia's direction. So it generated a lot of interest. So they've been going back talking about the war from 98, 99. The BBC was saying, and I maybe I haven't been following, I don't know when they shifted gears, that the Serb government engaged in a brutal crackdown on Kosovo Albanian separatists.
Hmm.
In which 13,000 people were killed. Like, wait. I was told they were fucking genociding Albanians.
Hmm.
Okay? I was told they were genociding Albanians.
Okay.
And then earlier in Bosnia and like Srebrenica, they were saying they were genociding them there too, right? But it's just not true. I mean, there was a war between two armies, one of which was funded by the United States. Terrorist army, the Kosovo Liberation Army, was staged an insurrection against the Serbs. The Serbs went and they fought them in a brutal crackdown. 13,000 people died. Okay. That's not genocide.
No.
It's not anywhere close to it. And more than 13,000 people were killed in the U.S. bombing.
Hey, it's your worst possible nightmare. It's the sound of Borzoi interrupting whatever wonderful talking point Mike is making right now, interrupting your own train of thought. And you're in this position, listening to me right now, well, because you're listening to the free version of this show. You're not even getting all the content, and now you have to listen to me. Is this what you want? Is it really? You want to hear this? You want to hear me? That just can't possibly be what you want. So if you want to rectify that issue, go to therightstuff.biz/paywall. You can make one-time donations and get 3 months, 6 months, even a year. So why are you doing this to yourself? This has to be especially troubling because I'm not even going to check the audio on how this sounds. So you could also be listening to just terrible audio right now. So why not just stop doing this to yourself and get behind the paywall at therightstuff.biz/paywall.
So, yeah. I mean, you know, when these claims of genocide, they're propagandistic. They're meant to start wars. That's why people make claims of genocide. And now the United States and the Jews that run it, you know, they continue with this Holocaust myth and they invoke it. I mean, the Holocaust legacy was very present in those invocations of genocide against Slobodan Milosevic and the Serbs in the 90s. The Holocaust was right there. Like, it was constantly discussed because America,
you know what I remember?
Is the guy that fights genociders.
Why was the language soft-pedaled, though? Was that just like the style at the time? Because remember, that was when they came up with ethnic cleansing. Milosevic was guilty of ethnic. That made it sound like you were just like, you just had Mr. Clean and you were going around with some, like, Mr. Clean and the Brawny Man went around and tried to change the demographic of your nation for it. We're just cleaning. Ethnic cleansing. It was very, very weird. Right. Like, why would they soft pedal?
Well,
is it a genocide or like, what are we talking about here? It was very strange.
Well, ethnic cleansing is a term that was used as you said, as a way to soft pedal and back off genocide claims. And the reason they couldn't maintain genocide claims was because like too many people saw what was actually going on and had recorded it. Mm-hmm. And again, looking for bodies, they did a propagandistic excavation.
I'm ethnic cleansing my body.
Ethnic cleansing these bodies. You know, they did a propagandistic ethnic excavation of bodies at Srebrenica and said, like, this is a genocide. But again, they never found more than several. It was like several thousand, I think, they found there or something. But it was like, okay, I mean, this is the site of a battle.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, there was bodies. Mm. You know, like, so, like, this is kind of my point, like. And the ethnic cleansing was deliberately meant to be conflated in your mind with genocide. So they would tell you, this is again how they operate. They make the bombastic propagandistic claim, right? You get that claim in your head. But then Cockerill, who the scholar, is like, oh no, that's not, no one says that that many Jews were gassed. That's not the claim. See, no, yeah, no, that's the claim, dude. That's what people learn in school. That's what norm. The fact that both of those normies thought that, I mean, from the perspective of the Holocaust, thought that is because that's the message you get.
The question is, like, why has the claim changed? Explain it to them. Yeah, why is the claim changed? That's the real discussion. It's why have these changed?
I mean, we went from genocide of Serbs genociding Albanians to 13,000 people dead in brutal crackdown, which is really, frankly, it's more like a civil war where the United States was funding and arming one side in order to carve out an artificial state. You want to talk about ethnic cleansing?
Can you really call it a civil war? Cleansed. Can you really call it a civil war when there's like international assistance to one side, though? It's like almost like something else is happening here. Yeah, I know what you're saying, but
that's a coup. It's a coup.
Right, it's a coup.
It's a gay op. It's a color revolution. It's whatever. Well, the other thing is Serbs were ethnically cleansed.
Yeah.
Because in Kosovo, 200,000 Serbians that used to live there were forced out. They don't live there anymore.
Hmm.
So it's a small place. It's like a million, maybe 1.2 million people live there. A lot of them are still Serbian. As we saw with this phony election fucking scandal that the Kosovars initiated, they basically said to the Serbs, like, because in the northern part of Kosovo is like a little turd hanging off the bottom of Serbia. And the northern part of it is all Serbian people, right? Right on the border with Serbia. It's all Serbian people. And those people still say that they live in Serbia. And they owe their allegiance to the Serbian government. They get their driver's license from the Serbian government. They get social services from the Serbian government. They pay taxes to the Serbian government. And they do this as a form of like constant civil disobedience. And the Kosovars don't like it. They've been trying to regain control over those territories for years. But because America and NATO don't really want to dip their toe back in, like really it's just been status quo. And Gunther just seethes and seethes and seethes about it. But they did a thing the other day where they're like, we're going to have elections. And the Serbs are like, well, we are not participating in these elections. We like the current administrators and mayors that we have in this district up here. So we're not going to participate. So election turnout was like 3%. The Albanian candidate wins. And the Kosovo government goes in with like police to try and install these people. And the Serbians were like blocking the town halls. And they're like, you're not going to put those people in. Rioting happens, and now everybody's saying, like, you know, Gunther is out there saying it's all Serbia's fault. They should have, you know, Kosovo's. Anyway, whatever. It's a funny little story. My point is, like, these kinds of claims of genocide are just not credible.
Right.
They're always meant to start wars. They're always propagandistic. They're always, frankly, lies. And they always get revised. The only one that hasn't been revised is the Holocaust. Even the claims of genocide and mass death and killing and brutal the Hun killing the children from World War I were revised. Mm-hmm. The Soviet ones were revised. It all gets revised because it's not real history. It's not real history. It's lies. It's invented by one side to justify their victory or their actions.
That's what it usually is, like justifying something terrible that happened in the past. Like, well, they were doing a genocide. Right. We had to stop it.
You want to talk about bodies incinerate. Bodies. Incinerate.
I'm burning my body.
Hiroshima and Nagasaki. How does America deal with Hiroshima and Nagasaki?
Well, we make movies about how awesome it was.
We have 70-inch IMAX, 600-mile film
That is
reels.
Great. I was trying to segue to that. Like, we were going to talk about Oppenheimer. Right. Like the new Christopher Nolan, totally real and like, no moral judgments here are made. Like, let's invent an atomic bomb and throw it at Japan.
No judgments here are made.
No judgments here are made. How many fucking Americans, like, died? Like, hey, okay, we're going to blow this thing up over here. You stand over there. Let's see how long it takes you to get cancer. Okay, you got it, boss.
Well, not only that, how many Japanese people were literally burned to a crisp with no fucking remains? I mean, that bomb actually did burn people.
You can turn that into a plot point in a Wolverine movie. Like, oh, Wolverine survived the atomic blast. Isn't he cool? Look at his Japanese friend.
Oh, I remember that scene, where he hides in a hole or something like that.
They're in a well.
All the Japs get fucking roasted.
He saves some dude, and his, like, skin melts off, but it grows back because he's Wolverine. It's good stuff. It's good stuff. No judgments here are made, though.
I vaguely remember that one.
Yeah. That movie's hard to watch. It's not very good.
This movie, Oppenheimer, which Christopher Nolan is directing, Cillian Murphy plays Oppenheimer because he's, like, a skinny nerd. Like literally, that's what it is. Like, who looks like a skinny nerd? Oh, this guy.
Well, he's kind of like the girls like him though. Like, he's handsome.
Yeah, he's got that emo look, right?
Yeah,
he's got like that. He's got like that The Cure look, or like, you know, is that like that emo thing? But anyway, yeah, the girls do like him. They also have other notable handsome actors playing other Jews, like Robert Downey Jr. is playing some Jew named Strauss.
Oh.
Is
he all like snarky and sarcastic?
Isn't his name Cillian Murphy?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure.
But is the Robert Downey Jr. character? He's all like snarky and has a lot of bants, and he's just charismatic.
I'm sure Robert Downey Jr. always plays Robert Downey Jr.
He always has
Stark, or it's just him. Anthony like Stark. That's just him, just sarcastic,
Annie.
Just doing banter. just doing like really obnoxious banter constantly. Like he probably is doing that in this movie. Matt Damon is in it, although I think he's playing a goy. So the book is called, and then I think Jack Quaid, who has been on Red Letter Media,
he's
in the Boys, Meg Ryan, isn't Dennis Quaid.
Isn't he in that terrible Boys show about the comic book anti-heroes and stuff? And
I don't know. I don't know because I don't follow trash. But he's in it. He's like pretty handsome Hollywood, known for their good looks, are like Matt Damon, I think, is playing a goy because I saw a clip where he's in a military uniform. So that signals goy because Jews don't usually do that.
No.
But all the scientists were Jews.
Right.
Manhattan Project was a Jewish project. And the thesis of this American Prometheus book, however, they say they don't really put too much of a point on it, though. But they say that, like, Oppenheimer did supposedly have some sort of moral struggle with what he had done. And he criticized the use of the bomb at Nagasaki because it was needless. And I'm like,
what about the other one?
weren't there two, though? Wait a second. I thought there were two.
What about this new one
was needful?
Was it needful to have this like new era in geopolitical international relations where like you have the haves and the have-nots with the bomb and you have this non-proliferation and all this shit? Like, was that really was this a good thing to work on?
Well, we had to do it before the soul. Oh, hi guys. Here's another pre-recorded interruption. Not an actual interruption. I'm just here to remind you, we need you to go ahead and pick up a subscription at therightstuff.biz/paywall. You can use money orders, you can use crypto, you can use e-checks, you can even go to my Odyssey channel, Uncle Spen's Other Tone Stream, and you can use your credit card on there to get around the Jews' banishment of our banking services. That works. So you can do that until you can't. I don't know. But thanks. We'll be right back to the show now.
Hopefully it's did.
I had to do it before the Germans did. That's the excuse.
Right.
The book is by a guy named Martin J. Sherwin.
Oh, God.
He's a Jew from Brooklyn. He grew up in a humble Jewish family in Brooklyn.
You just call it the Brooklyn Project? Should that be the show title?
His mother was a housewife, and his father was a manufacturer of children's clothing. Okay, so his father ran a sweatshop. Great. I mean, that's what it is. That's what that means, right? And then he enlisted this guy, Kai Bird, who seems to be a goy, but who grew up as a military brat on military bases around the Middle East and is married to an Israeli woman.
Oh.
As a result. And has written a book about how he's got one foot in Israel, one in Palestine. I'm like, doesn't seem like you got one in Palestine, bro.
That's good, right?
I'm seeing you kind of going in feet first, you know, Israel.
Well, that foot in Palestine is like stomping on Palestinians, right? It's like establishing settlements and bulldozing.
Right. Right. So it's funny. I couldn't find much on the. I mean, the thing is, this book when it came out in 2005 won like every fucking award. Like, of course, as they do. So, American Prometheus. Listen to this shit. The triumph and tragedy of Robert J. Oppenheimer. Remember, this is a guy who created a device, created a weapon that actually incinerated 600,000 human beings.
And that was rough on him. To be fair.
And look, he had to suffer for that.
He had to live with that.
He had occasional sleepless nights.
Just like the guys who mowed down the Branch Davidians, you know? They had to live with that for the rest of their lives.
We should never really, what is harder to live with? We shouldn't really punish people for crimes because knowing that they committed the crime. is punishment.
Well, what's harder to live with, like killing a bunch of people or being dead?
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
But I want to. It's like I pulled up the trailer here. It's like,
oh gosh,
I've seen it before. Seen the trailer. Yeah. And the trailer is. So, I mean, it's very. We're doing like high Kino here. You know. An emergency. Look at this stuff. Detonator charged. Oh, is that the guy from The Office? Nowak or whatever his name is. Whoa. Whoa. What happened to them? Did they break the sound effect there? Like. Oh, we're doing black and white. That means the movie's serious.
I'll bet you they do. I bet you he does a trick where it's like black and white until they like blow up the bomb.
You're right.
And then it's color.
You're right. He doesn't look very handsome.
What's that nigger
here.
Doing there?
Yeah, that seems odd.
Well, you just have to have them around.
How's he?
I almost didn't see him because he kind of matches the background.
You know what I bet he is?
How's he fit into the picture?
I guarantee
like,
you
that wouldn't have been.
I guarantee to you he's like the moral conscience of the entire film. Like he's there to be like, I don't know about this, doctor.
I don't know.
Listen, doctor.
Is this really the right thing to do?
I've been thinking about blowing people up.
Jeez.
I don't know, man.
It ain't right, man.
But, you know, we can't let Hitler get the bomb first, though. That true.
If the Nazis have a bomb.
Whoa, wait, hold on. That looks intense.
If the Nazis have a bomb.
Oh, I thought I...
And I know what it means. If the Nazis have a bomb.
Oh, he's doing the Jack Bauer, like, I'm going to whisper really hard, and I'm yelling at you, but I'm whispering. What if the Nazis have a bomb?
Intensely. Also, my bug eyes are kind of disturbing. Very so, very much so, actually.
I like all the splodies.
You have a 12-month head start. How could you possibly know that?
We've got one. I made it up.
One hope. All America's industrial might and scientific innovation connected here.
Oh, this is a
secret laboratory.
This is so dramatic, and this is so Kino. Like, I'm hooked. I want to know all about it.
This is interesting.
What's up? Yeah.
Keep everyone there.
So,
what you got?
The military buttgoy Matt Damon seems to be expressing some skepticism at Oppenheimer's very confident claims.
They have 18-month head start.
That the Nazis have this head start on an atomic bomb.
Weren't they too busy like smashing bones and like hiding ashes?
Yeah, it's like they barely could get a bone crushing machine together. Right. I mean, come on now. But
they've been trying for 18 months. They've been trying to drag this captured submarine engine all the way across Europe to gas people with it. You know,
it seems his role here is to be lobbying the military industrial complex. Which was sort of in a nascent phase back then. It was sort of coming into being as it is, you know, as this massive undertaking.
Hmm.
Maybe Oppenheimer really is sort of the father of this military industrial complex. He was the one who said, let's get all of our scientific and military, all of our resources of this vast continent spanning nation together to build this bomb. Because if we don't, the Germans will have one in 18 months. How do I know that? I just made it up.
Let's go recruit some scientists.
Dude, that's so gay.
That's a line in a movie. Oh, here's
that's the kind of thing that people in movies say.
This is a funeral pyre. Oh, no, it's actually just train tracks.
Is that going to Auschwitz?
Is this where they're going to pile up bodies and burn them with no fuel? And
is that train going to...
What are we doing in the football field here?
Build a town, build it fast. If we don't let scientists bring their families, we'll never get the best.
Why would we go to the middle?
Did they build a company town to build the bomb? That's interesting.
Well, nowhere.
Yeah.
For who knows how long.
Why? Why? How about because this is the most important thing that ever happened in the history of the world?
Oh, my God.
Oh, God. Is that?
That is what? Now, that.
Is that Einstein?
Right there. Matt Damon.
Matt Damon.
Beautiful acting. Amazing. That's what I call acting.
Matt Damon. Why? Why? How about because this is the most important thing to ever happen in the history of the world?
You're the great improviser, but this... you can't do in your head.
Are we saying there's a chance that when we push that button, we destroy the world?
Chances are near zero.
Near zero.
What do you want from theory alone?
Zero would be nice.
Wow, that's the kind of thing they say in movies.
Wow, I hope they can not physically destroy the world, just like spiritually over time, like create a thing, a threat. We don't want you to destroy the world right now.
It'll be a process of slow decay.
Yeah,
we want about a half century.
We want this to be like a looming threat over the existence of the world.
Once we win, don't worry, things will just be going downhill at a rapid pace. Culturally, socially, everything. Yeah.
This is a matter of life and death.
Oh.
I can perform this miracle.
It's a miracle. I blow up something really big, it's a miracle.
World War II would be over. Our boys would come home.
That's happening, isn't it?
It's happening.
World.
Did he just do the Ron Paul meme?
It's like, it's happening. And then, like, the bomb explodes. It's like, yes.
World.
Duck and cover.
We'll remember this day. Our work here will ensure a peace mankind has never seen.
Well, this is pretty annoying. You don't want to hear my voice. You want to hear Mike finish his thought, huh? But you can't, because you don't have a subscription. You should go to therightstuff.biz/paywall. Tag it.
Don't worry, we've got the A-bomb in a wooden crate. It's totally safe.
Somebody builds a bigger one.
Oop. Tactical silence.
You are the man who gave them the power to destroy themselves. And the world is not prepared.
Who's that? Who's that supposed to be?
Some faggot was like... I don't fucking know who that's supposed to be.
The guy had an accent. Is he supposed to be an evil Nazi that flips
sides?
To
be, well, he's got a British accent, so that means.
Is that a British
really
accent?
Smart.
It's like one of those, like. It's one of those Angelina Jolie and Alexander the Great. Like, where the hell. What country is this guy from? I don't know if you remember that from the old Ben Stiller show where they were.
It's like.
They're making fun of the Bruce Willis
into,
movie.
I just blew up 300,000 people and chill, and he gives you this
destroy
look.
Destroy themselves. And the world is not prepared.
Mr. McGee.
Was that Sean Bean?
Eight, seven, six, five. Four,
you know, here's the thing about this movie.
Ooh, the guy
needs to know what's next.
Two,
what's next?
One.
Shot with IMAX film cameras. That means it's in fucking 4:3 aspect ratio.
That means it's really big.
That means it's not, but it's not widescreen, though. Like, I want my nuclear explosions in glorious 2:34:1, please. I want a real film ratio. Oh, is there a post?
I was reading something about the production of this film that they didn't want to do CGI for these explosions. They wanted to do, like, real explosions in the film or something.
Oh, shit.
Blow up a nuke?
Just fucking blow up nuclear weapons. Screw it. It's America.
I mean, that would fit with, like, everything. Like Oppenheimer, you make the bomb. 75 years later, America, like, blows up another one for a movie. But I don't know if they actually did that or not. But, you know, I think it's important to understand that, yeah, he killed 300,000 people, but he struggled with it. Look, you know, let's think about him, about his thoughts, his inner demons that he's struggling with as people are melting.
As people were becoming shadows on, like, stone walls.
Yeah, no, it's literally, like, people's, like, and the survivors literally, like, their skin just, like, fell off their bodies and they died. It's just, it's awful. It really disgusts me. It made me kind of sick because I had actually been reading some of the after-action reports that the U.S. government put out about this. And when you read that...
Oh, my God.
You can't help but feel sick to your stomach.
I found a great comment.
With this type of propaganda.
When you read into it, the fear that the chain reaction may engulf the whole planet in the same atomic fire was incredibly scary reading it. The Bomb by Fred Kaplan is one of those books where you experience the same fear that Sarah Connor felt watching her past self in T2 at the park when the hydrogen bomb hits.
I just want to grab the fence.
It's a book you didn't finish because the fear will get to you. I'm Sarah Connor. I'm grabbing the fence. This is how I relate to world events with other movies.
My body is waving in the wind.
I feel
the
just like a
hellfire.
I feel just like a fictional character right now.
That makes me want to grab the fence.
So where is that from? Reddit or something?
No, this is in YouTube comments under the trailer.
Oh my God. Dude. people. Yeah, that's wow. That's a.
Oh, here, this all be good. What is this video? Hold on. A little related bit here.
Okay, so here we go.
He knew the world would not be the same. Few people laughed. Few people cried. Most people were silent. I remembered the line from the Hindu scripture, the Bhagavad Gita.
Oh, this is famous. Yeah.
Yeah.
Vishnu is trying to persuade
the prince
that he should do his duty, and to impress him, takes on his multi-armed form and says, "Now I am become death, the destroyer of worlds." I suppose we all thought that one way or another.
Guy fucking sounds like a psychopath.
Is that Oppenheimer saying that? Who's saying
that? That's what it says. Yeah, it says it's J. Robert Oppenheimer.
Okay, yeah, so there we go. So it says here on the synopsis for this book, America, and they call it American Prometheus. That's the name of the book.
American
so
Prometheus.
So already he's calling himself a god, and the god, you know, that touched fire, that brought fire to the mankind, right? So you have Oppenheimer voiced that he did not regret the making of the bomb. As Germany's nuclear ambitions during World War II had many countries concerned about the future actions of the country, there had been a much more pressing concern of Nazi Germany completing nuclear weapons program before any of the other powers during the Second World War that the United States did not wish to risk. And then I have a nice big fat needed, which is funny because isn't this an article about a book? Like, isn't that in the book or not? Anyway, I don't know. It's sort of interesting. There's a citation needed there. Oppenheimer had certain qualms about the atomic bomb and the potential future usages of the bomb that could lead millions of people to their deaths. He and other scientists voiced their concern and disagreement of the usage of the bomb in Nagasaki, finding that it had been a needless choice. Okay. All right. The book uses, okay, so then it says, talks about Prometheus, Greek mythology, Titan, god of fire, famously known as a figure symbolizing eternal repentance for stealing fire from Zeus to give to mankind. Titan had done so in order to save this wave of mankind that had already collapsed twice due to war and famine. This book uses the comparison to elicit the weight of the nuclear weapon that Oppenheimer carried for the rest of his life.
Did Prometheus, like, stand by the bike rack and tell everyone that Zeus was trying to steal his fire?
Well, what was done to Prometheus, I would say, should have been done to Robert Oppenheimer and all these kikes involved in the Manhattan Project. Wasn't he, like, tied to a rock and a bird, like, eternally ate his liver or something like that?
Except like his liver.
Every day, a bird would come and, like, eat his organs, and then they'd grow terrible. Back. And
like liver.
Yeah.
Liver's gross.
So,
iron helps us play.
Another animal's blood filter.
So, yeah, remember, it was his struggle that matters, his internal demons.
His internal, yeah.
Not the people who, like, literally were melted and had their skin fall off their faces and were destroyed. And look, when you read the U.S. bombing after action reports about the bombing of these and what they were observing and then what they observed and heard from observers of people who saw, like, the walking wounded walking out of the blast zones, it's a zombie horror film. Yeah. And it's grotesque, and it sounds somewhat like crazy Jewish tales of the Holocaust. Thing is, this really happened.
Yeah.
They actually put this massive bomb in a city.
It's actually documented. You don't have to go to some Japanese archive full of documents you can't read.
It's documented. The United States brags about it and now makes movies about it, valorizing the people that did it in order to make them not seem like total evil ghouls, which is what they actually were.
Yeah.
They pretend like they had some kind of inner demons. I don't give a fuck about your inner demons.
It's like you're America's inner demons, Jews.
Right. You're the inner demons of our country.
We have to fucking wrestle with constantly.
Yeah. So of course, like, it's also, this kind of shit is also the kind of thing that, like, dumb people find impressive. Like, oh, dude, can you imagine, like, struggling with being the guy that invented the atomic bomb, bro? So, bro, like, oh, you have so many moral dilemmas, bro.
Like, fuck you. Well, like, this guy had to live with that weight his whole life. It's just like Prometheus, bro. It's fucking heavy, dude. Shut the fuck up. Yeah.
Oh, God.
So I'm not going to be going to see Oppenheimer. One, I can't take... I hate all movies, but I hate these kind of movies. Like, Jewish prestige dramas, I hate the worst of all. And Matt Damon overacting is just, like, sickening. And
I kind of want to watch just for that.
Yeah, I kind of want to watch just his scenes. Because every fucking scene, every clip in that trailer, they probably gave all of his money lines anyway, right?
It's possible.
They gave away Matt Damon moments.
Nolan's technically, he's usually pretty good with the Kino, so it's possible there's plenty of other examples of it.
Right, but every line he had was like a quip, like a funny thing, right? Like he was like, let's go recruit some scientists.
From Theory? I'd like to hear
Zero
nice.
What
I want to hear.
Yeah, it's like...
But it all worked out, Goyim. What are you complaining about? See, the world wasn't destroyed, at least not by fire.
Wait, what? Mike was going to say what? Did we all miss that? Is that because this is the Free Fag Edition? Go to therightstuff.biz/paywall for your subscription today.
Yeah.
Not by fire and nuclear chain reactions.
Maybe they opened some kind of a gate to hell and now, like, actually, like, we are now living with that. Like, a gate to hell was opened and out of it came hentai and anime and, you know,
Vending machines with used ladies' underwear in them. All kinds of Japanese horror stories. They do have a nice subway system, though, from what I understand. You can go on a train there and almost never be greeted by like a. Well, if there's a psychotic like Michael Jackson impersonator on the train, it's an immigrant, and they generally get beat up. I don't. Did you see like that dude that was doing like what was his name like Johnny Somali or something? He was like harassing some Japs on their train system, and they fucking like they faced up with him. He got in his face about it and was like, oh man. And then there was a follow-up video like a few days later. He's just walking down the street and people are just like accosting him. Somebody punched him in the head. Basically because the clip went viral and somebody recognized him and just beat him up in the street. It was fucking great.
That's good shit.
That's a good... Send niggers
that
to Japan.
That should happen to all niggers that are like loose on public transportation.
Yeah.
Was he black? Was this guy black?
Yeah.
Johnny Somali.
Well,
like you're a black guy in Japan. It's like, oh, that's the black guy. The black guy.
He like yelled nigger at him and like his, you know, terrible Japanese accent was hilarious.
Nigga. This guy's name is Johnny Somali.
Yeah, it's just, you know, that's just like IRL streamer name, you know. Let me see if I can find it was a funny clip.
It's bad enough they bother people here. Do they need to go to Japan and bother the Japanese too?
Yeah, they do.
I don't
just fucking leave people alone, man.
Yeah, I've got... Oh, is this recent? Because I've got Korean man calls out live streamer.
Oh, maybe it was in Korea. I thought it was Japan. Whatever. It's all the same.
Oh, it was in Tokyo. Korean-American man calls out live streamer for harassing people in Tokyo about World War II. Oh, he definitely needed his ass kicked. Videos of the incident, which involved the content creator known as Johnny Somali, have been widely reshared on various platforms.
And it's been taken down by copyright claim. Well, you fucking bitch.
What a fag.
Oh, that's funny as hell. Copyright claimed yourself getting owned. Oh, well. What are you going to do? What are you going to do?
So,
what are we going
to
do?
Wait, hold on. I want to read this.
Take a break.
In a viral screen grab of Johnny Smalley's live stream, content creator can be seen harassing Japanese man in white by asking him if he knows what Hiroshima and Nagasaki are. The Japanese man appears to be confused by what the content creator is saying, especially after the latter says, "Why you do this, Pearl Harbor?" Johnny Somali then films other passengers minding their own business and ignoring his remarks. Hiroshima, Nagasaki, you know what we do to you niggas. Hiroshima, Nagasaki, we destroy because you niggas don't know how to behave. Live streamer can be heard saying, "I swear to God, you do again, we gonna do again. You understand? You understand, Hiroshima? You niggas don't understand our power," he continues.
Wow.
Then turns attention back on the man in white and says, "Hiroshima, Nagasaki, you know we gonna do it again." Now, here's the other thing. This was done right around the anniversary of it. because the anniversary of it was just a couple weeks ago. Oh. So if he did this a couple weeks ago, he was doing this like on the anniversary. Johnny Smollett continues to rant. The man Raider removes his glasses. So yeah, then a man in blue can be seen approaching, call him out saying, leave him alone, just leave him alone. Right. So then actually this, he then asks Johnny Smollett where he's from, which the content creator says, America, you're from America. So am I, you're being obnoxious. Right. Anyway.
Yeah. But there's a follow-up video where he gets attacked in the street because somebody recognizes him from the video.
Because he's a nigger.
Yeah. That's that nigger. Yeah.
Oh, he's back in action now.
Yeah. Why not?
What a faggot.
The internet is such cancer.
It's really,
it is.
Yeah.
It is cancerous.
Why should this be allowed to happen? Like, why should this guy be allowed to do things? Like, he should have been put the Japanese should have executed him. You know, executions in Japan are so rare. Mm. You know how they do it? They still hang people. Like, if you are executed by the Japanese state, you get hung. And they should hang Johnny Somali. He should have been hung. He should have been arrested and hung.
Hanged.
Sorry.
My mother hung herself.
And the reason people are hanged is because the executions are so rare, they never bothered to come up with some humanitarian method to meet the
sensibility. My subway Somali was hung.
Wait, that means something different than what you think, Captain.
I mean, he was hanged. I wish I could find that clip.
Also, like, think about this. I mean, if anything, Oppenheimer, that you created this. Like, this is an atrocity that you created. Some nigger, empowered by, like, bullshit nigger politics in America, goes to Japan 80 years later, 78 years later, and just, like, harasses random people on the subway, saying, we're going to do it again. And, of course, you know, being a nigger, he is the ultimate representation of America.
Right.
Being an obnoxious nigger, we are going to do it again. Yeah, that's right. That we applies to him. Doesn't apply to me. I have nothing to do with this. But, yeah.
I guess there's more than one of these.
Yeah, that we can't find the video of this.
But I got this one. I think this is the video I saw.
England nigger.
I think a man on a bike is chasing him.
I don't say nothing. What? Nothing, bro. I don't say nothing.
You want fuck?
No. No, I don't want to.
What?
Nothing.
Say
nothing.
Nothing?
Yeah, nothing. We good.
I don't think you good.
I don't think so, bro.
What?
Nothing. Sabai.
What?
Sabai, nothing. No problem. It's no problem.
What?
No.
What?
No, we good. Hey, we chill. Sabai. We good.
Come on, man.
We good.
You fuck?
No.
Fucking racist.
Oh, I'm good. We good.
Fucking racist, come on.
We good.
Fucking racist, come on, man.
No.
What? You fuck?
We good. We good. We good.
What the fuck is on his phone?
He's like, he's streaming and talking on the phone. This isn't the one that I saw. I guess there's more than one of these. I guess he's just being, like, chased around in Tokyo, because I saw one where a guy punched him.
So that guy has, like, a strange... He's, like, a zoomer and a nigger. He's got both things going for him. He's, like, a skinny... You. He's, like, an obnoxious, skinny nerd and a nigger, and he's, like, trolling. Like, I wish that guy would have kicked his ass.
I think this is...
I love how this shit is allowed. But, like... Yeah, like this is what I'm saying. This is all a result of the atomic bomb.
Yes, this is what the bomb really did. It destroyed
the
world.
This is what it really, this is what it created. This fucking nigger. The ultimate result of America becoming the dominant world power is this. Like, this is what you've created. This is where we are. I don't really know much else to say. There's nothing that could condemn the United States, the evil empire of Zog, more than this. I mean, this is, yeah.
Oh, God, I just hit the heart react. Sorry.
Well,
those damn emojis. They're all...
Okay, shut up. I'm not trying to listen.
All right. Well, I can't find the clip that I saw the other day on Twitter, so he probably copyrighted it.
Yeah, he copyright struck it because...
But he got hit and called a nigger by the Japanese, and he had to like hide behind the police, who were just like, whoa, what's going on here? Everybody just calm down.
The thing that sucks is the state of the internet today. You probably can't find that clip.
No, and he's got a bunch. And he's got a bunch of videos on his channels where he's like bragging about how they how he got pressed by Yakuza, you know, because he got.
How does he know they're Yakuza? Maybe it's normal Japanese.
Oh, it's just regular Japs. They're just mad.
Yeah,
which is gay.
He's trying to give himself clout by saying it's every Jap man.
You mad online?
I don't blame
Jap bro. It's like, well, no, I'm mad in real life. In the real life, Johnny Zamali.
Real life.
Anyway. Let's take a break, get some lunch, other good stuff. Come back. We'll have more fun. We had something else in the prep. I couldn't remember what it was. Something Jewish.
Well, here's what happened.
Oh,
let me explain real fast. Borzoi sent me a text message of an article.
Oh,
and then told me, I don't know if this is actually something you want to do on the show. I'm like, well, why did you send it to me? Then I'm reading the article. I'm like, no, this is great. Okay. I like this. This is great.
Borzoi prep. The long nosed dog.
I want to actually take a look at it. It looks like the kind of thing a Marxist screenwriter would have come up with as a parody of American capitalism, but it's not.
Oh, is this about the cement trucks? Oh, hi. Here's another interruption that's pre-recorded. Go to therightstuff.biz/paywall and pay for a subscription. We need your support. We need your help. We can't do this for free because we're Jews. But the
no, this is about NADA. It's about the what is it, the National Auto Dealers Association. They have a big conference. Nikki Haley, all these fucking Republicans go to it.
All right, I haven't heard about this. All right.
It's a circus of cringe.
Okay. That sounds good. We'll do that. We'll be back in a few.
You are listening to the Daily Sower.